Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
For confidence in your financial plan, look for a CFP professional. When your financial advisor earns the CFP certification, it means he or she is trained to provide ethical financial planning across a holistic range of topics, from retirement and investing to taxes and estate planning, all in your best interest. So, with a CFP professional, you'll feel confident in your financial plan today and tomorrow. Three letters do make a difference. Visit letsmakeaplan.org to find your CFP professional.
Hey, Ron, is it cool if I grab a glass of water?
Austin and I are back at Ron Kuby's office going through the police file.
So the most intriguing thing about this file will certainly appeal to your sense of trying to see the unseen is this memo book entry.
Ron is holding up one page, a page of handwritten notes from a memo book.
Right. Now, do you know how a memo book works?
No.
Okay. Back when the universe was young and dinosaurs roamed the planet, you would have like these stenography books.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd write on this side, right. Then you'd flip it over and you'd write on the other side, pressing really hard. Upon photocopying, you will see a precisely mirrored writing. See that? See all this stuff here?
Yeah.
This is the flip side of this page.
Yep.
Just below the writing on this page is an imprint, a very faint outline of the writing from another page.
If you hold that sucker to a mirror and shine a light directly on it, the hidden writing will be revealed, and who knows what key to the universe this poses. I haven't really had enough time to play around with it, but...
Holy shit.
You want to do it together?
Yes.
Okay, come on.
Yes.
Ron leads me into his kitchen closet.
Don't take this the wrong way. You have to go into the closet.
Ron, I came out of the closet a long time ago.
Okay, now you're going back in.
There's a mirror against a wall. Ron holds up the paper, and we lean over to get close, studying the reflection.
So, if you look at this carefully, this is...
Narcotics.
Mm-hmm. These are the names of detectives.
Detective.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I can't quite make it out, but under better light...
Roact.
Maybe.
We can't make out a name.
And maybe... This has absolutely nothing to do with our case.
But as we walk out of the closet, I look down at the police report in my hands and realize that this imprint has everything to do with our case.
It's all the shit that's redacted on the page before. It's the same. It's this.
Oh,
it's
look
that.
At you. Yeah.
Yeah. It's this.
Okay, you get the redaction. So you may actually get the... You may actually get the name of the guy that
That's the name
Billy.
Of the...
Yeah.
It's the name of the undercover cop who shot Billy. We sit down in Ron's conference room, and Austin, who's been quiet this whole time, speaks up.
So I just want to say that you've ruined my reveal, Ron.
Oh, you know that?
I'm trying to go into this, but while we're here... So I noticed the similar thing, and I brought it into Photoshop.
Wow. No fucking way you didn't.
Let's see.
Do you have the fucking name?
Yep.
Oh my God, you have his fucking name.
And his shield. Manhattan Narcotics.
Detective Ronald... Holy shit. We have the guy in the cowboy hat.
From Crime Town, I'm Io Tillett Wright, and this is The Ballad of Billy Balls.
She knew who had come to visit Billy that night. She knew that it was a police officer, an off-duty police officer in a cowboy hat.
Billy said to me that the dude that shot him came to the hospital and said to him, "If it was up to me, you wouldn't be in here."
There's another reason why you may not be able to get access to a particular record, because the officer was working undercover.
Chapter 12, The Guy in the Cowboy Hat. Everyone I've talked to for this project who knew Billy wonders who the guy was who shot him.
It sounded to me like this guy was like just some bad, dirty, sleazy, rogue cop kind of guy. The guy like busted in and shot Billy. And I heard something later on that guy either got killed or whatever. He was kicked off the police force and investigated. He was like some dirty rogue cop.
The cops broke in, guns a-blazing. And I remember hearing people speculate, like, is this cops shooting people because they're assholes?
Why would the police shoot him? It's got to be more to it than that.
Unless you get to interview the guy in the cowboy hat, I don't know how you're ever going to solve it.
There was an undercover cop, some crazy lunatic obsessed with my dad, and there's so many things you think about that dude. Like, was he, like, put in this position to monitor my father? Was he demoted from something and he was all bitter? You know? I've put so many thoughts into who this guy could be.
Hey.
Hey, man. How you doing?
I'm good.
I'm out of town. So Austin and I are doing some studio coordination.
Are you in the studio?
Yes, I am.
And preparing to call the guy in the cowboy hat. He's in his early 70s, lives on Long Island, and goes by Ronnie. We won't be using his last name.
Well, I will tell you that when I talked to Ronnie the other day, he didn't seem extremely enthusiastic about... This?
Right.
Just,
right,
you know, be cordial and kind and nice and all that. He may be a murderer, but he may not be, so.
All right. Well, it's 10:59.
Okay, we are recording.
Austin, talk to me for a sec.
Yes. Hello.
Yeah,
hello,
okay. Hello? That's good.
Okay, I'm going to call Mr.
Holy shit.
Hello?
Hi, is this Ronnie?
Yeah, hello, Aya.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for taking my call. I
don't know what assistance I can give you, because really probably not much. Other than it's on the, like, there's, everything's on paper.
Yeah, you know, from my side, it's like you're probably going to be more useful than you think, because this was such a big moment in my mom's life. But because her and Billy weren't married, she was really kept out of the loop on everything. And so over the last 37 years, it's kind of become this mythological story of what happened. And you are the only person who knows what happened that night.
Well, I'm sure she's upset, naturally. Of course she would be. But it doesn't change the fact.
Sure.
And everything is on, like I said, everything's on paper. Totally. It was completely investigated 9 different ways. And it was completely legitimate.
Yeah. I know this is a fragile situation, and he can hang up at any second. God, I have so many questions for you. Can I just ask you one question just about how you...
I know, you have 1,000 questions and none of them I can answer, probably.
Well, I'm curious about you a little bit. Like, how did you become a cop?
Oh, that was a long story, a long time ago.
I was in school for chemistry. So I wasn't looking to become a police officer, but I took the test. And I was married, and then my wife had a baby. I was 20 years old. I was in my second year of school, and I left there to go to the police department.
Ronnie started as a trainee in the late 60s.
Once I got in, I loved every minute of it. It's a great job.
It seems like a terrifying time to be a cop, though, in the like...
Oh, was it dangerous? Absolutely. Of course, it was incredibly dangerous.
How did you get into undercover work in particular?
Prior to becoming an undercover, I was an investigator. And we had no undercover to go out and do buys to go to an area. So I did it. And then once I did it again and again and again. Next thing I know, that's all I did.
You know, I had some exciting cases, many, many exciting cases.
Did you like...
It worked out better.
Yeah. Did you like working undercover? It seems stressful to me.
But... Yes, I did. It was good because you had a lot of control of the case.
What were some of the more exciting ones that worked out better?
Well, I worked on the Westies.
The Westies is an Irish-American gang that's dominated organized crime in the Hell's Kitchen area of Manhattan for decades.
It was Irish gangs on the west side of Manhattan. They told me, people in Manhattan South told me that they killed over 100 people. Ripping them off, contract killings.
Even among organized crime rings, the Westies were considered especially brutal and were known for dismembering those they killed.
As he fell on the floor, that's how quick the plastic came out. They had him severed, ripped apart in about an hour like mad dogs.
Almost impossible to ever get an inroad into the Westies.
I think I was like the primary undercover in a Westie case. And they had someone to introduce me to the people.
Ronnie says that in the mid-80s, he went undercover as a drug dealer to build a case against the Westies.
It was just like a drug connection to them. I was like a major drug dealer. Because they believed, you know what you're doing. And very often wear a wire. Just hanging out with them, drinking, talking, buying them drinks. Like my friends. It's not that they like you or anything like that, because I don't think they like anybody. If you kill 25 people, what kind of person would you be? They're looking to make money. They're just hopeful that you'll be able to make money for them.
And Ronnie convinced them that he could make money for them.
They gave me like, I think it was 50 or 60 pounds of amphetamines that they stole in an armed robbery on consignment. But they also told about how they got this thing on a stick-up on Long Island. They put 8 people in locked them in a room, took all the what they felt was the good amphetamines, and left with suitcases full of stuff. Like, they thought that I was, like, so connected I could just sell it off and give them a couple hundred or whatever they wanted, which, of course, I didn't.
Instead, Ronnie says he passed on the information to the NYPD and the FBI.
It was like very, very exhilarating, and it was, you beat them. They won over the bad guy. You got them off the street. And they really were bad people.
And those people all got put away?
Yes, they did for a very long time. I did quite a few cases. I worked on the Bonanos down by the fish market.
The Bonanos, one of the major Italian mafia families in New York City.
They were into everything, drugs being one of them. Counterfeit credit cards at the time, extortions, you name it, they did it.
75-year-old Joseph Bonanno, the reputed crime lord of New York City, a leader of one of the five mafia families. Tomorrow, he goes on trial for allegedly interfering with a grand jury investigation.
I was designated undercover for a total of 17 years. I've done a total of over 1,000 drug buys in my career.
Police say a string of storefronts were used for the packaging and sale of illegal drugs. The peddling took place on the Lower East Side.
Did you work in the East Village in particular a lot, or were you all over New York?
I did a lot in the East Village, not in particular. It was just one location.
I don't think that they can ever stop the drug flow in the Lower East Side. I don't think we have enough law enforcement agents to stop that.
After the break, Ronnie goes to 13 Third Avenue.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation. I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Do you mind telling me just like what happened that night?
I can't go over details, obviously.
I'm on the phone with Ronnie, the undercover cop who shot Billy. Can you tell me a little bit about your undercover persona that you had? Like, did you have like an outfit or something that you wore back then?
No, I just tried to be like fit in with the average drug deal, depending on a different case.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever wear a cowboy hat?
No.
No, huh. It's weird. There was this rumor that it was that you had been wearing a cowboy hat.
Well, someone else may have been, but I wasn't. I never wore a hat.
Huh. Well, Do you remember, like, when you first heard the name Billy Piano? Because it sounds like he had a bit of a reputation. Do you remember hearing?
Well, I only got that from the informant. I did not know him prior to that. The informant is the one.
Got you. Ronnie says an informant tipped the police off to Billy. And was the informant part of a bigger case, or was that like a one-off?
Well, it was part of a case, and it was a larger target, obviously. It was not my case. I was not the investigator. I was the undercover. Another detective would have done the investigation, did all the background, found out who we're buying, what we're doing, and then he would introduce me to the informant. This is just basics of what they do. And then I get introduced to buy drugs.
Do you remember what the substance was that you had been told he was selling?
Yes, he was selling, obviously. And the idea was to get the connection that was beyond him, above him, who totally was doing quite a bit of weight in heroin.
In heroin?
Yes.
Got you. Did that case ever go anywhere, and whatever happened with that situation?
I never worked with him again. I'm sure that someone else did. So I only had one part in the case, and that was it. It's just one of those things that went wrong.
Ronnie says that Billy called his supplier.
Okay, so when are you coming?
And Ronnie went into the bathroom.
I was writing down the connection phone number, and he followed me to the bathroom, unbeknownst to me. And had a gun on me. I don't know what would set him off, even if I was writing a phone number down to pull a gun on somebody.
Right.
And then he cocked the gun, which really set me off, because when you cock the gun, you have, like, a hair trigger.
And you felt, like, significantly afraid. It was the cocking that made you think, oh, like, this guy's gonna actually shoot me.
He's not the only one that's pulled a gun on me, but he's the only one that convinced me he was about to fire. He activated the round that would have been in the chamber. It was like, not a good move on his part.
Ronnie says Billy then backed out of the bathroom with his gun still up.
He went out prior to me with the gun on me, and it's pretty uncomfortable.
He says he took out his buy money.
No, that was really basically to distract him, because there was no deal at that point.
And then?
It occurred quickly. I thought that he fired. I saw a spark coming. I think it was a simultaneous fire.
Ronnie says he thought Billy had fired. He thought he saw sparks from Billy's gun. In the police report, it says that Billy never fired his gun.
That was the only disagreement we had. So whether there was that first shot actually went off simultaneously, or am I seeing my own sparks? In other words, sparks came from his direction, but was I actually seeing my own sparks? I don't know. I can only say what I saw.
Huh.
But he is known to fire his gun, according to the informant now. But the informant, I believe, was totally, totally truthful, and he was petrified of the guy. They said he never got to fire it. I said that he did, because I saw the thing, and I'm the one who decocked the gun and emptied it.
Would that make a difference to you if it was?
No, I wouldn't have made a difference at all.
Hmm. Did he seem erratic to you?
Well, didn't he? Yeah, he appears to me to be pretty high.
Hmm.
I've seen things go down where I just say, why would this guy have done this? And drugs is very often the cause.
What happens, like, right after you...
Well, right after, we did everything we could to save him, to get him to the hospital and get him fixed up. But it was just...
You tried to save him?
Yes, we did. We got him right to the hospital. He was actually interviewed by the team afterwards.
Right.
Because he was in the hospital and he survived initially.
Did you ever go see him in the hospital?
No. No.
Huh.
I'm sure he wouldn't want visitors for me.
I wonder if you're comfortable telling me a little bit about, like, what you felt in that situation? Like, was that a rare occurrence? Or there,
it's a rare occurrence. I actually end up in a shootout of any kind. And I was not happy with it at all. I mean, you can't be happy being involved in something like that.
So it's bothered you?
No, it did. Of course it did. You didn't want that to happen.
Yeah.
I can't imagine anyone being happy about it. Obviously, I was going around shooting people. I was a cop for like 40 years, and he was the only one.
He's the only one?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's a sad thing. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a sad thing. It's really wild to hear that in your 40 years as a police officer, he was the only one.
The only one.
Ever shot. That must stick with you.
Well, it is what it is. I mean...
Yeah.
Nothing's going to change it. So I can't really talk too much more about it. I don't want to get into anything. Like, I'm not even probably supposed to be talking to you at all.
Okay.
I don't want to go too far with it.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you again. I really appreciate it. And I hope you have a beautiful day.
Oh, and same to you. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Ayo, tell me what you're feeling.
I sense an openness from him. I get the sense that he cares. He struck me as somebody caught between how much he believes in his job and like a very human response, which was, this is very unfortunate. And like, he stopped short of saying, I'm sorry, but I could feel that from him. Like, he wasn't like, fuck it, like, whatever. Yeah, so what? This happened. He was a fucking high maniac, like, whatever. When he said we did everything we could to save him, make sure he went straight to the hospital, there's remorse there. I'm just looking over the questions that we have for him, and it's like, it was fucking heroin.
It was heroin.
I also find it very interesting that says he never wore a cowboy hat. I also find it very interesting that says he never visited him in the hospital. And his response to that also was interesting because he said, well, no, I mean, that would upset him, which I find to be a very human answer to the question of, did you go see the man who you just shot 6 times in the hospital? I too would be like, well, no, he doesn't want to see me. So.
He also gave some details about the cocking of the gun that make me think that he's telling the truth. About him remembering yeah. Billy cocking it and him being the one to decock it afterwards, you
yeah.
know?
I think him also emptying the gun and that was a very human detail.
It doesn't seem like he was making it up.
Here's my understanding right now. I don't think Ronald went to that house to kill Billy Balls. Based on the information that we have, I don't believe that. I can see a world in which the bigger case, like, what if, no, that doesn't make any fucking sense. There's just like, the conspiracy just falls apart for me. It seems all really fucking unfortunate and stupid.
Yeah. It's all very sad.
It's devastating because it didn't need to happen. If Billy hadn't been erratic and high, probably, and if he hadn't had a gun, wouldn't have shot him. And all this tragedy, all this devastation of him being ripped from my mom and it seems to me that it did not need to happen. As Ronnie has spent 37 years probably telling himself that he did the right thing, my mom has also spent 37 years telling herself that he did the wrong thing, and that this great tragedy, and she was robbed, and Billy was robbed, and all of these things. And the whole thing is just this, like, exercise in what the mind creates versus what the reality is when you just have all the fucking information.
You're all alone in this world.
She here?
I think she's here.
Next week?
Let me just take off my coat.
One last sit down with my mom.
Uh-oh, being led to the kill.
It's the final chapter of The Ballad of Billy Balls. Crime Town is Zach Stewart Pontier and Mark Smerling. The Ballad of Billy Balls is hosted by me, Io Tillett Wright, and made in partnership with Cadence 13. You can find me on the internet. I'm Io Loves You on everything. Do say hi. And if you want to know more about my story, you can pick up my memoir, Darling Days. We also want to hear from you. We have a voicemail set up for you to call us and tell us whatever you want. Here's a guy with good taste.
Can I just say, I think that the theme song is absolutely genius. Absolutely genius, and is perfect for the podcast. I wish you all the very best, regardless of how this turns out. I've enjoyed the hell out of it. Thank you.
I totally agree. Everybody should check out the rest of their music. Light Asylum, they're the best. If there's something on your mind, thoughts, feelings, complaints, whatever, call us and leave us a voicemail at 570-392-9660, especially if you have a family mystery. I'm obsessed with hearing about them. You can also get into our discussion forum on our website, theballadofbillyballs.com. The show is produced by me, Kevin Shepherd, and Ryan Swikert. Our senior producer is Austin Mitchell. Editing by Zach Stewart Pontier and Mark Smerling. Fact-checking by Jennifer Blackman. This episode was mixed by Sam Bayer. Music by Kenny Cusiak. Our title track is Dark Allies by Light Asylum. Archival research by Brennan Reese. Special thanks to Nicole Wong. Thanks to Daniela Araya, Rachel Lee Wright, Emily Wiedemann, Green Card Pictures, Alessandro Santoro, Bill Clegg, Ben Davis, Oren Rosenbaum, and the team at Cadence 13. And of course, my mom, without whom none of this would be possible. And this week, I want to give an extra shout out to Austin for his handy Photoshop techniques.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.